a West Virginia town on the map. Feels like it's hardly up from a nap. It's Colwood. Well, time goes by like it wants to stay, and the clouds move only when they're blown away from Colwood.
Chapter 1, Colwood. Until I began to build and launch rockets, I didn't know my hometown was at war with itself over its children, and that my parents were locked in a kind of bloodless combat over how my brother and I would live our lives. I didn't know that if a girl broke your heart, another girl, virtuous at least in spirit, could mend it on the same night. And I didn't know that the enthalpy decrease in a converging passage could be transformed into jet kinetic energy if a divergent passage was added. The other boys discovered their own truths when we built our rockets, but those were mine.
So begins the book Rocket Boys, the story Homer Hickam Jr. wrote of his childhood growing up in Colwood, a mining community in McDowell County, West Virginia. One October night in 1957, when he was 15 years old, the life of young Sonny Hickam, as he was known then, changed forever.
It turned out to be the pivotal night of my life. We were in a deep cold war with the Russians at that time. Everybody was scared of the Russians, and the Russians were scared of us, and we were afraid of a big war, and all of a sudden the Russians got ahead of us. They launched this world's first Earth satellite, and everybody was scared to death of it. But I'd read a lot of science fiction growing up, and I thought it was kind of cool. And I read in the paper where Sputnik was going to fly over Colwood, and I thought, wow, I want to see that. So I told my mom I was going to watch Sputnik fly over, and she told the neighbor lady who told the neighbor lady who told the neighbor lady. And when the time came for Sputnik to fly over, about half Colwood was in my backyard. Then my dad walked out and said, Elsie was the name of my mom. He said, why are all these people in our backyard? And she said, well, they've come to help Sonny watch Sputnik fly over. And he said, well, they can all just go home because President Eisenhower would never allow anything Russian to fly over Colwood. So he put on his hat and he went up to the mine and never looked up once. And if God himself had flown over in a golden chariot, I would not have been more impressed by what I saw. And I knew at that moment, somehow, some way, I wanted to be part of this movement into space.
Gene, this is my baby.
We climb the winding stairs to the top of Homer Hickam's baby, a giant water tank with portholes around the sides. It's a main feature at the U.S. Base and Rocket Center, a museum and space training camp in Huntsville, Alabama. It's 30 feet across, 25 feet deep, and holds 100,000 gallons of water.
We're at the underwater astronaut trainer. This is a smaller version of the big tank where I used to work out at NASA. It's about a tenth of the size of the old neutral buoyancy simulator. What we did underwater was we trained the astronauts how to do things in zero G by using the buoyancy of water to simulate space conditions. That
was in the late 1980s. While they were redesigning this world-class space museum, Homer moved from NASA's Marshall Space Flight Center next door to work here. The Rocket Center has more than 500,000 visitors a year, including 40,000 children and teenagers who come here to attend Space Camp or the Space Academy.
They were doing a great big redesign of the whole Space Camp facility, and I convinced Ed Buckby, a fellow West Virginian who was the general manager at that time, to let me build a small version of the neutral buoyancy simulator to train the Space Academy kids in. He thought I was crazy, but he let me do it anyway. What is down there is a mock-up of kind of a made-up satellite, but the kids go down there on scuba. They feel like they're weightless in space, and they learn that it doesn't take much of a push, and they go sailing off, and they've got to get handholds, they've got to get their feet restrained, and then they do work.
From the time Homer and the Rocket Boys won the National Science Fair in 1960 until he actually got a job here at NASA was more than 20 years. In the meantime, he got a degree in engineering from Virginia Tech, joined the Army, went to Vietnam, and worked for the Army in Huntsville, Alabama, and Germany. He also worked as a professional scuba diver and nearly gave up his dream of working for NASA. Then NASA called.
So I came back to Huntsville, Alabama, and began work at the Marshall Space Flight Center, essentially helping to design a new science laboratory that would fit into the shuttle cargo bay called the Space Lab.
And when we got the space lab all designed and ready to fly, I trained astronauts to perform scientific experiments in space and also started traveling around to different universities across the world, helping the scientists to design their experiments and fit them in the space lab experiment racks.
For 20 years, Hickam continued to work for NASA. He loved it.
Every scientist I know loves their work. Every engineer I know loves their work. When I worked for NASA, I woke up every morning and I said, oh boy, I get to go work for NASA today. I mean, how cool is that? So whatever it is in science and technology and math, if you decide that that's the direction you want to go, I can almost guarantee you're really going to enjoy your life. Now, I was a very poor student right up to high school, but when Sputnik got me interested in rockets and space, all of a sudden I found out that I could learn anything if I had a reason to learn it, calculus and differential equations, and I saw the application for it, and it was like learning a foreign language. All of a sudden I could speak that language, and it was fun to learn it and then use it.
Everything we see in the Space and Rocket Center is the inspiration of Wernher von Braun, rocket scientist, the father of space travel, and Homer Hickam's childhood hero.
That's Dr. von Braun's desk that he worked from and the rockets that he was responsible for, from the old A4, commonly known as the V2, right on up to the Saturn V. You can see every rocket got a little bit bigger until the last one, Saturn V, and no rocket has been built as big or as powerful since. And it was the rocket that took the first humans to the moon.
We choose to go to the moon. We choose to go to the moon.
On September 12th, 1962, President John F. Kennedy declared that the United States would go to the moon by the end of the decade.
Because that challenge is one that we're willing to accept, one we are unwilling to postpone, and one we intend to win, and the others too.
7 years later, on July 20th, 1969, man first stepped on the moon.
That's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
The Saturn V rocket that took them there is a National Historic Landmark. It's housed in its own building, and nothing prepared me for the wonder of seeing it up close.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness.
This is the Saturn V. This is the rocket that took humans to the moon for the first time. No rocket like this has been built since. No rocket like this may ever be built again. It's a remarkable machine. It was Dr. von Braun's vision from the beginning.
Homer Hickam would like a national holiday to honor President Kennedy's dream and Wernher von Braun's vision. And the current CEO and executive director of the U.S. Space and Rocket Center, Deborah Barnhart, wants to honor Homer. She's impressed with Hickam's expertise in so many different areas.
He reminds me, I hate to say it, and I know it's going to make him blush, but having just read about 7 or 8 books on von Braun, he reminds me in many ways of that, because that was one of the geniuses of von Braun, that he was interested in so many different things and was accomplished in many different areas. So
thank
could you.
You
get us to Mars now, Homer? That's the only thing he left undone. I'll leave that to you.
To Mars. If they made me an NASA administrator, I'd have this there in under 10 years.
But while Homer Hickam was training astronauts in Huntsville, he never gave up his other dream, being a writer. In his spare time, he wrote for the Smithsonian Air and Space magazine.
I was asked to write an article of 2,000 words. They didn't care what it was. They just needed it overnight. And I proposed writing about, well, since it's air and space, I said, you know, I used to build rockets when I was a kid. I could write you 2,000 words on that. And they were completely, totally, utterly underwhelmed with this idea. But they thought, oh, that sounds boring. And I kind of thought it sounded boring, too. But that was a challenge. So I wrote them 2,000 words in a couple of hours and faxed it up to him. And the next morning, Pat Trenner, the editor, called and said, Homer, I think you're onto something. Half of my office is laughing at your article, and the other half is crying.
That one article in Smithsonian Air and Space magazine was the trigger that literally changed your life.
Oh, it absolutely did. The idea that anybody would care what happened back in Colwood, West Virginia in the 1950s was the farthest thing from my mind. I couldn't imagine anybody would really care.
But care they did. The book Rocket Boys quickly led to a Hollywood film, October Sky. Hickam retired from NASA that year and has been writing ever since. So far, he's sold 2.5 million books, many of them about his hometown of Colwood, West Virginia.
So rise, find the strength that's deep inside you. Rise.
The story of six boys building rockets in a deep mining valley in West Virginia has become classic.
And the dream you have needs freedom. Change the view before your eyes. Just rise.
In 2011, Rocket Boys the Musical had its world premiere in West Virginia. And perhaps surprisingly, even the other Rocket Boys knew from an early age that Sonny Hickam would become a writer. Jimmy Odell Carroll.
One thing that I remember in second grade, don't remember first grade, Mrs. Williams, but Mrs. Brown was second grade, and she asked us all to write a story or report on what we had done for our vacation. And I remember that Hickam had written a whole page of stuff. And looking back, he was a writer from the get-go.
Billy Rose, Rocket Boy and retired electrical engineer, agrees.
In the third and fourth grade, we would take field trips. And we would go and visit a Pepsi-Cola plant or an ice cream manufacturing plant or some other process in Welch. That was the fun part. The hard part was to come back and then write about what we saw and what we did. Well, I can remember struggling to write a few sentences. Here, Sonny would come along, and he would write two or three pages about his field trip, the same trip that we took. And his description of what he saw made me believe that I didn't even go to where he went.
And at every opportunity, Homer Hickam gives credit for his success to the teachers at Colwood School and Big Creek High School.
They taught us very firmly. We were expected to perform. But we loved our teachers, even as strict as they were. And I think that's part of it. If you remember a teacher, it's most likely going to be a teacher that was not your buddy, not your friend, not your pal, that was easy and gave you grades. You're going to remember the one that was hard, the one that cared enough to be hard, the ones that made you toe the line. So what does West Virginia mean to me? It really means the people who gave me my values and teachers who gave me a great education, really gave me the tools to go off and succeed in life.
In return, Homer Hickam is giving back to West Virginia. Each year he gives scholarships to youngsters at Marshall and Concord universities, as well as his alma mater, Virginia Tech. He also returns to West Virginia every autumn for the October Sky Festival and takes time to talk to each young person who wants to meet him. The head of the U.S. Space and Rocket Center, Deborah Barnhart, believes that Homer Hickam's talents, vision, and legacy have truly changed the world.
I think Homer embodies the idea, one of my favorite von Braun quotes, and that is, he said, "All one can leave one's children is what's in their heads. Education, not material things, is the only legacy that no one can take from them." And I think Homer has devoted his life to inspiring people to become educated in ways that can help the culture and humanity by giving us wonderful stories and by giving us demonstrations of reality that has moved the culture forward and moved the planet forward.
For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Jean Snedeker.